for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for this time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day.
Good morning. I'm Jessica Sievers, secretary on the board. I welcome you, one and all, to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan on this fourth day of autumn. It really snuck up on us, didn't it? We have no required creed here. We believe in the liberal idea that each person finds his or her own path, whether it is working towards inner peace, particular social justice goals, or other religious destinations. And so I welcome you, whether this path or that path brought you here. And I ask you to join us today with an open heart, an open mind, and we greet you with the same. In the spirit of community, I ask that you take a moment to greet those seated around you. We do invite visitors and guests. We invite visitors and guests to sign our guest book at the welcome table. On that form, you can request a complimentary subscription to our newsletter. If at any time you're in the audience and you cannot hear us, please raise your hand and kind of motion to your ear. We want everybody to be able to hear. If you're curious about what we're about or about Unitarian Universalism in general, I encourage you to talk with people after the service. Everyone is invited to join us for coffee in the Alsop Room, which is down the hallway to the left, or you may join Reverend Jonalu after the service right here in the sanctuary at 12:15 for our Path to Membership class. For more information, you can see the insert in your order of service. I'd also like to draw your attention to other announcements printed there. So, our fellowship is trying something very new and very exciting, monthly themes. Throughout September, we ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a community of covenant? A covenant is a living, breathing aspiration made new every day. It can't be enforced by consequences, but it may be reinforced by forgiveness and grace when we stumble, when we forget, when we mess up. If you want to make a change and make the world a better place, start with that person in the mirror. Take a look at yourself and ask yourself to make that change. You can do that by signing up for our chalice circles. See what I did there? So you might be asking, what are chalice circles? They are small groups that will meet once a month to deepen our understanding of ourselves and Unitarianism. They'll strengthen our relationships with ourselves as a community. And we encourage you to sign up in the narthex just outside after the service. For more information, please ask the attendant at the table or see the insert in your order of service. So the flaming chalice is a symbol for Unitarians. The torch held high overhead by the Statue of Liberty is our symbol for Americans. Dave Lambert has some words, and Matthew Ebersole will do the chalice lighting.
Matthew, if you want. Thank you, Matthew. Many of you have seen the Statue of Liberty standing at the entrance to New York Harbor. In her right hand shines a beacon, a light for all the world. On her pedestal is a poem expressing the dream of what America is. The poem was written by Emma Lazarus. Emma Lazarus was born in 1849 in New York City to a family of Sephardic Jewish descent. Primarily a poet, a novelist, a writer, she became deeply involved in working for refugee rights and settlement in the United States. Inspired by her own Sephardic Jewish heritage, her experiences working with refugees at the entry to America, and the plight of the immigrant, she wrote The New Colossus, which I paraphrase here. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand blows worldwide welcome. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 129, Let Love Continue Long. As we build a community of covenant, let love continue long so no hurt can ever have a say. Let us now share our joys and sorrows, Regard your neighbor's gain as your gain and your neighbor's loss as your loss. Please raise your hand for the microphone.
Good morning, Christopher Renner. My joy is there was a fabulous film on last week, Tuesday night. Did anybody happen to watch PBS and see what two Unitarian ministers did in the bleak years before the rise of fascism in Germany?
And you'll hear more in the reflections.
All right, because I just found that to be a really well-done film. If you missed it, go to pbs.org and click on, I think that's under American Experience, if I remember correctly, and watch. It's a fabulous two-hour presentation on what two very dedicated people could do.
I'm Jane Pelletier. Most of us might know that Barbara Hacker has left the hospital and is back at Bramlage. So that's good news.
Well, seeing none others, we honor those joys and sorrows shared here today. For those left unspoken, we hold you in our hearts. As a native Kansan, seeing the sunflowers blooming reminds me that there's no place like home.
I want to say just a word about the music committee's involvement in the themes of the months to come, to this month and the months to come. We look for music, hymns, and other things that will fit it well. Our first hymn was the hymn of the month, and there will be a new hymn of the month that we will sing each Sunday in October, and another one for each of the remaining months of the calendar. And so that's part of it, and we are singing this morning Already Home, which comes from a relatively new Broadway show about The Wizard of Oz. And the good witch, Glenda, personified here by Marissa will open the piece. And our rationale for choosing this was that if you're going to covenant with some people, it ought to feel like home. And there will be other more tenuous links between what we sing and the week of the theme of the week, but we'll do our best. And one other point I want to mention, that this is the first Sunday for Matthew Meals to join us as our pianist, and we great to have him. You'll like what he plays. the offertory, the Chopin offertory, berceuse is the word for a French word for lullaby, and every composer worth his salt wrote something, and Chopin did it better than almost anybody else. But we'll sing our song now.
You think you're lost, but that's not true.
it's now time for our story for all ages. Children of any age, and even the young at heart, may come up and join me for a story, after which we'll sing them off to their RE classes for childcare. Children, come up front if you would like. So before I read this book, The Giving Tree, can anyone tell me what is a covenant? Covenant might be a type of tree. Okay. Any other ideas? Kind of like yours, because you see what I'm going to read. So a covenant is kind of like rules or maybe promises that you might make. What happens if a promise is broken? How does that make you feel?
Sad,
yeah. Sort of frustrated? Ooh, I get that a lot. How do you fix it?
You make another
promise. Yeah, you begin again. So can you have a covenant with a like a pet dog? Sort of, yeah. Okay, kind of a reward system. If you do what I asked you to in the dog show, I'll give you a reward. So promises that you might make to an animal, like, I promise to feed you, I promise to give you water, I promise to take you out on walks. What do you think the dog does for you in return? Yes. He'll what? He'll cuddle with you. You might play, yeah?
Toy.
Play with your toy, uh-huh. Have fun. So they'll do a lot of tricks for you. He might demolish your shoe, and then you're out of covenant, right? So you can have a covenant with other things, like a parent. A parent will provide you food and shelter, and if you're sick, they might take you to the doctor. And what are some things that you do for your parents in return?
Yeah. I give them lots of my papers.
He gives you lots of his papers. Okay, like homework from school? Do the dishes. Okay. And art. Ooh, I like that one. So for the children at heart out in the audience, think about the relationships in your life as I read and ask yourself if you're in covenant with one another or does it need a little work? So once there was a tree and she loved a little boy. And every day the boy would come, and he would gather her leaves and make them into crowns for playing king of the forest. He would climb up her trunk and swing from her branches and eat apples. He likes that idea. And they would play hide and go seek. And when he was tired, he would sleep in her shade. And the boy loved the tree very much. And the tree was happy. But time went by, and the boy grew older. And the tree was left alone. Alone, yeah. Then one day the boy came to the tree. And the tree said, "Come, boy, come and climb my trunk and swing from my branches and eat apples and play in my shade and be happy." "I'm too big to climb and play," said the boy. "I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money. Can you give me some money?" he asked the tree. "I'm sorry," said the tree, "but I have no money. I only have leaves and apples. Take my apples, boy, and sell them in the city. Then you'll have money, and then you will be happy." And so the boy climbed up the tree and gathered all her apples and carried them away. And the tree was happy. The tree was happy that he made the boy happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time, and the tree was sad. And then one day the boy came back, and the tree shook with joy, and she said, "Come, boy, climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and be happy." "I'm too busy to climb trees," said the boy. "I want a house to keep me warm. I want a wife and children, so I need a house. Can you give me a house?" "I have no house," said the tree. "Do trees need houses?" "No, but they can make houses." "The forest is my house," said the tree, "but you can cut off my branches and build a house. Then you will be happy." And so the boy cut off her branches and carried them away to build his house.
With leaves.
And leaves, too. And what do you think the tree was? Was the tree happy? He doesn't think so. I think he's onto something. So the tree thinks it's happy. Yes. Yeah. So the boy stayed away for a long time, and when he came back, the tree was so happy to see him she could hardly speak. "Come, boy," she whispered, "come and play." "I'm too old and sad to play," said the boy. "I want a boat that will take me far away from here. Can you give me a boat?" he asked the tree. "Cut down my trunk and make a boat," said the tree. "Then you can sail away and be happy." So the boy cut down her trunk and made a boat and sailed away. And the tree was happy, but not really. After a long time, the boy came back again. "I'm sorry, boy," said the tree, "but I have nothing left to give you. My apples are gone." "My teeth are too weak for apples," said the boy. "My branches are gone," said the tree. "You can't swing on them." "I'm too old to swing on branches," said the boy. "My trunk is gone," said the tree. "You cannot climb." "I'm too tired and old to climb," said the boy. "I'm sorry," said the tree. "I wish that I could do something, give you something, but I have nothing left. I'm just an old stump, and I'm sorry." "Well, I don't need much now," said the boy, "just a quiet place to sit and rest, as I am very tired." "Well," said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could, "well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting. Come, boy, sit down. Sit down and rest." And the boy did. And the tree was happy. The end. Before we receive the gift of the offering, some words from Martha Sharp, who we will hear more about from Reverend John Alou. And like Emma Lazarus, Martha aided refugees, some who escaped Nazism and found sanctuary in America, rejoicing at the first sight of the Statue of Liberty. Martha says, "Every life we touch had its own drama. One can only imagine a miracle every so often, but a series of miracles can happen when many people become concerned and are willing to act at the right time."
Thank you, Matthew. This morning's reading is from a Unitarian Universalist Association pamphlet written by the Reverend Dan Hotchkiss, entitled The Flaming Chalice. As a sacrificial fire, flame has been a central symbol for the world's oldest scriptures. Today, lights shine on Christmas and Hanukkah. Eternal flames stand watch at monuments and tombs, and candles flicker in cathedrals, temples, mosques, and meeting houses. A flame can symbolize witness, sacrifice, testing, courage, and illumination. The chalice and the flame were brought together as a Unitarian symbol by an Austrian artist, Hans Deutsch, in 1941. Living in Paris during the 1930s, Deutsch drew critical cartoons of Adolf Hitler. When the Nazis invaded Paris in 1940, he abandoned all he had and fled to the south of France, then to Spain, and finally, with an altered passport, into Portugal. There he met the Reverend Charles Joy, Executive Director of the Unitarian Service Committee. The Service Committee was new, founded in Boston to assist Eastern Europeans, among them Unitarians and Jews, who needed to escape Nazi persecution. From his Lisbon headquarters, Joy oversaw a secret network of couriers and agents. Deutsch was most impressed and soon was working for the USC. He later wrote to Joy, "There is something that urges me to tell you how much I admire your utter self-denial and readiness to serve, to sacrifice all, your time, your health, your well-being, to help. I'm not what you may actually call a believer, but if your kind of life is a profession of your faith as it is, I feel sure then that religion, ceasing to be magic and mysticism, becomes confession to practical philosophy, and what is more, to active, really useful social work. And this religion, with or without a heading, is one to which even a godless fellow like myself can say wholeheartedly, yes." So please stand in body and soul, as you are able, to join us in singing hymn number 134.
The seas that wash us round about. people through the ages. Finding a community of love and concern has made the difference between a vital, connected life and a lonely, barren existence. Too many of them, once they find their place, burrow into comforting community, keeping others out. Or if not vigilant about keeping them out, at least keeping them at bay, escaping from the challenges of the world by surrounding themselves only with people who think like them and worship like them and eat like them and live like them. They become over-identified with their community, and those outside are dismissed as wrong-headed or dressed wrong or reading the wrong scripture. I think of the satirical newspaper, The Onion, which years ago had a headline that said, "Jesus is my Savior, not yours." We human beings need community and connection. We need to be able to trust one another and grow together. We need to learn from one another. Inside a community of covenant, a place of promises made to one another, may be the best place to accomplish that. But if we care only for our promises to one another, our circle of covenant is too small. Psychologist Bruno Bettelheim writes, "Community is viable if it is the outgrowth of a deep involvement in a purpose which is other than or above that of being a community." We have to be gathered around more than just commitment to one another. We have to have a higher good drawing us together, or we end up turned in on ourselves, which leads almost inevitably to turning on others, if not on one another. So this morning, as we do every Sunday morning, we lit a chalice. And the practice of lighting chalices to begin UU services is not an ancient practice, but is a meaningful one, and one that directs us outward as well as inward. As Dave told the story of the artist who created that first image of the chalice, that's when it appeared. And it was 75 years ago now. 75 years ago. So Hans Deutsch, who drew that chalice, of course supported refugees from Nazi Germany. So when we light the chalice, we remember him. We remember those refugees who were trying to get away. When we burn this little bit of wick and oil, we're welcoming people into our midst, into covenant with one another and with us. And we're honoring and remembering Deutsch and people like him, forced from their homes and communities, crossing borders, strangers in a strange land. So how many of you did see that documentary Christopher talked about the other night? Okay, so quite a few of you. And as he said, it is well worth checking out pbs.org or whatever it is and finding it, because you can watch it for the next couple of weeks. Now, the story of the movie, which is not the story in the movie, but the story that is not in the movie, that's about the movie, began... Did you get all that? The story of the movie, how it began. Ninth grader Artemis Jakowski had a project to do for school, and he had to interview someone who had shown moral courage and write a paper about it. His mother suggested perhaps he could talk to his grandmother. She did some cool things during World War II, she said. Jakowski did the paper and made an A on it, which really stuck in his mind because he was not used to seeing A's, because he was a mediocre student. And that began his obsession with his grandparents' story. And he began researching it and putting all kinds of things together and put together his own film that eventually Ken Burns was able to see, and together they constructed the film that is now on PBS, Defying the Nazis. So it took decades to do that. Now, if you saw the documentary, you know that Wait Still Sharp, Joukowsky's grandfather and a Unitarian minister, was invited by the American Unitarian Association to go to Prague, Czechoslovakia, in February 1939, shortly before the Nazi army marched in and took over. His mission was to help Jews and opponents of the Nazis escape. His wife, Martha, a social worker before their marriage, came with him. And they took on a task that had been turned down by 18 others who were asked first. It's not hard to imagine why people turned it down. The Sharps sacrificed awfully. They left their two very young children to be cared for by others. They placed themselves directly in the line of an impending war, a war people knew was coming. To call their mission dangerous underestimates it. Had they been caught, prison would have been the least of it. They could have been tortured and killed. In the documentary, Martha talks about how the training and situation changed her from an open, trusting person to a suspicious, guarded one. So she even lost part of her personality. And the couple ended up divorcing after the experience. They sacrificed more than they even realized they would. You can't unsee the things they saw. You can't unfeel the desperation, the suffering, the fear, the sadness that comes from watching parents load their children on a plane into the hands of strangers, hoping for their survival, or personally hiding, as Martha Sharp did, in a doorway to escape notice of a trailing Gestapo agent, or breaking the law, lying to authorities, authorities much less bound by moral codes than those we're used to. What struck me was how they continually had to let go of some of their promises to keep a larger promise, a promise to leave the world a better place than they found it, to help other people who needed them, to keep the promise to the common good. They sacrificed promises to their children, to the church they served, to one another, even to themselves. Reminds me a little bit of the giving tree. In sharing his grandparents' experience, Artemis Joukowsky wanted their story to inspire others, not to overwhelm them. Joukowsky says, "Life is made of righteous moments, not grandiose moments, making choices where you reflect on how you treat everyone in your life. The key part about my grandparents wasn't just one big moment. They made thousands of little choices that led up to the story that we now tell." A striking feature of the Sharp story is that the U.S. people and government didn't help much. 83% of Americans in 1939 thought the State Department should not increase exit visas to help Jews and others escape certain death. Overwhelmingly, Americans did not want the European Jews to come here. And those attitudes are not much different from today. There are more displaced people today than at any time in recorded history. Watching Syrians walk across the border with Jordan looks a lot like watching the French walk across the border with Spain in the documentary. As we sang already home this morning, its meaning became more poignant as I consider their plight. And meanwhile, in this country, governors reject Syrian immigrants, and some Americans chant for building a wall on our southern border while we are already deporting more people than under previous administrations and detaining thousands of Central American women and children in family jails. These traumatized migrants are escaping places like Honduras, where the homicide rate is 50 out of every 100,000 people. We've made seeking asylum a criminal act. Even the Central American Minors Program that was supposed to help by keeping people in their native land while applying for asylum has resulted in some people being killed while waiting. When we focus too much on our own safety, our own comfort, our own people, we forget to ask how others are doing, what they need, and how we might be able to help. Episcopal Bishop Craig Anderson reminds us much of our concern for community, owing to a felt loss of it, is rooted in a misunderstanding of community as an aggregate of individuals in service to the individual. Instead of that, community needs to be rooted in serving a larger good, not in our personal benefit, or it becomes distorted and broken. When we start saying, "Am I getting my part of the pie?" we start losing what community is really about. And that's where our larger culture is today. So many communities, even churches, find themselves tied up in their own interests and defining those interests as antagonistic to people different from themselves. We are saturated by fear and anger. It breaks out in so many expressions. Police who shoot first and ask questions later. People who have taken to the streets and end up killing one of their own. People who don't know Muslims yet blame them for all manner of evil. And young Muslims, vulnerable to radicalization because of hatred they feel from others. Star athletes who sexually assault women. Religious leaders more ready to condemn than to embrace. People valuing guns over human lives, betting that's the way to security. Politicians who cynically use anger and fear to promote themselves at the expense of the common good. When we're anxious, frightened, and angry, we forget our covenants, our commitments, our shared past, present, and future. Who is part of my covenant? Can I be in covenant with Madres de Berks, the 22 Central American mothers held in detention for up to a year who went on hunger strike in the Berks County Residential Center in Pennsylvania, determined to get out dead or alive? Can I be in covenant with Syrians trapped between their government, rebels, and jihadist groups under assault from every side? Can I be in covenant with the Hunkpapa Lakota and those who have joined with them to block the Dakota Access Pipeline, asserting their treaty rights and concern for climate change? Can I be in covenant with families of Keith Scott and Terrence Crutcher and other black men and women dead at the hands of police? Can I be in covenant with Betty Shelby or other police officers who have pulled the trigger? Can I be in covenant with the Syrian rebels, with the Syrian government, with our own government? Martin Luther King asserted that we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. An inescapable network of mutuality means that we do all have an implicit, ill-defined covenant among us. There are many of us who fail abjectly at this covenant. The Sharps understood that covenant and felt called by it. Working from Prague and later from Lisbon, Portugal, where Hans Deutsch had taken shelter, they rescued scores of people, intellectuals, journalists, politicians, and children. The children particularly appealed to Martha's heart. They had moral imagination, said Sarah J. Bloomfield, the Holocaust Museum's director. They could imagine the human capacity for evil, and they could imagine the possibilities for action. It is so easy to blithely assert that we are all one. It is a lot harder when we start naming the individuals and groups who we claim as all one. I think about Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh's challenging poem, "Please Call Me by My True Names." Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am a mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river. And I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I'm a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. And I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up and the door of my heart could be left open. The door of compassion. I cannot be in covenant unless I can open the door of compassion. Writers, perhaps most famously Dostoevsky, have played with the idea that people might love humanity in general, though having no patience or feeling for the individuals, real human beings. We have to move from the generality to the specifics before we can decide what we can do. I feel the compassion, but I am worn by it. I struggle with all that's going on and my own place in it. I see friends or colleagues of mine joining in the demonstrations at Standing Rock or lending their presence to Black Lives Matter protests or volunteering at refugee camps, and I wondered, is that what I should be doing? I weigh out where I should donate my dollars and feel cowardly when I use money rather than putting myself on the line. And some days I talk myself into wearing a wristband or signing a petition or writing a letter. And often I worry that my cynicism has conquered my ideals and worn me down. What difference can my small action make? Or even if I sacrificed mightily, would it even make a dent? This is a place that the covenanted community makes a difference. Quoting Craig Anderson again, human beings don't create community as much as they are created by it. Human beings don't create community as much as they are created by it. Being in community that has a bigger purpose makes us into better people. We see examples of people who have acted with commitment in the past and who are doing so today. Their examples encourage us to act, not always exactly as they do, but in ways that are authentic for each of us. Knowing the Sharp story helps because two people saved many, many lives. They made a difference. Being in community also means I see how others make a difference every day. I hear your stories. Not only do the stories encourage and inspire me, the people also hold me accountable. If I say my values tell me that we are all connected, that what happens to one happens to all, then being with others who share those ideals reminds me that I need to live as if these are my values. Most importantly, being in community reminds me that I am not working for justice on my own. This year, when we tackled getting the city commission to pass the GBLT anti-discrimination ordinance, I felt the support of other local clergy. Yes, but more important was the commitment of this congregation. Each time I showed up at a city commission meeting, other UUs were there. Several UUs spoke to the commission, emailed them. I knew that I wasn't alone. So for me, there is hope in covenanted community. As Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. One of the ways that we hold ourselves in covenant is by talking together, meeting together. And Jessica said something earlier about the chalice circles. And those of us facilitating groups gave you an example of how those groups engage with questions during last week's service. This week, we're going to ask you to participate in such a small group exercise. But we won't make you come up here where everyone can hear and see you. Instead, I'm going to ask you to turn where you are to two or three other people as we pass around some questions. For you to address in this small group in the time that we have remaining. And as we did last week, try to give each person a chance to answer a question of their choice. There are three questions there. And then, as time permits, interact around what you have shared. You're welcome to continue those conversations over coffee or whatever, whenever. So, we've heard from history, we've heard from the present, we've heard from one another. So now I invite you to join in singing Rising in Body or Spirit, number 1014 in the Teal Book, Standing on the Side of Love. Dorothy Day. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. And may the work be a blessing to us. And may we continue it always.